And coming up next on Free Radio, it's, yes, you guessed it, Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. Special guest, Doug Loisel, who's a guy who's going to talk about the homeless, what I call the homeless lack of services center, services that homeless people should be receiving, his own impressions of how things are going here, and his experience with that particular group. Gosh, I think it was, what, 4 years ago? Something like that, 2009 now. And we've talked on the air before by phone. I don't think you've been in the studio before.
I've been once.
He was here once, but he had more hair then, I think. he's a man without hair, but not man without principles, and that's the issue. And we have a couple of other people, silent witnesses in the studio, to make sure we don't get carried away. So stay tuned. Sorry I'm late. We had a little difficulty kind of getting in with sort of a slow start. And I hope, for those of you who are listening on the radio, that you be aware you can join the program. You can be a part of Free Radio by simply using a phone, if you have one with you, or if you can find one of the rare pay phones that still can be found in the unusual exotic spots. The numbers here are 831-427-3772. 831-427-3772, and 831-469-3119, 469-3119. Let's listen to a little of the rather tepid but still occasionally amusing Capital Steps, and I'll be right back with Doug and my usual collection of interviews, commentary, and perhaps your phone calls. It could be. Hope you join me.
We protect the president from danger.
In Cartagena, we got help from strangers.
Thought we deserved a tryst. We got secretly serviced.
Odds are we won't be employed tomorrow.
Secret serviceman in Colombia.
We hired 15 hookers.
To pay with Groupon was our plan.
Though we got it on with some hot mama, we still take a bullet for Obama.
When we saw some hookers start aiming for his private parts, we gladly threw ourselves in front of danger.
Secret service hits where the danger sits.
We gotta frisk you ladies' blouses.
Yeah, we're looking for counterfeits.
In the press you've heard that they've been hinting
that we were trained by watching guys like Clinton.
We were having so much fun. Newt's just said his race is done.
Now that he's quit, he'll join us both tomorrow.
Secret service can help you understand.
You can't spend drunken nights with hookers unless you're a congressman.
Control pill, and I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill. Well, lots of folks would kill me in this capital city. In campaign season, the debate will not be pretty, but I know I'll be the rule someday. Make mamas rare, yes I will, when Obamacare gives us free pills.
Gee, Pill, you sure have a lot of patience and courage.
Well, I got this far. You see, at first, the president said that all health insurers must cover birth control as preventative care. But after complaints from conservatives, Obama amended it so that religious groups could opt out.
That's called morning after politics.
I'm just the pill. They'll debate me until they are sick of me on Capitol Hill. They held some meetings in committee, which only men addressed.
Now
women's rights have become a sausage fest. Priests and congressmen cannot write the law. They think they can tutor us. Keep your hands off of our uterus.
Gee, Pill, did you hear all those congressmen arguing? Is all that discussion and debate about you?
Yep, because the GOP right-wingers got into the debate.
Yikes, that's the proverbial elephant in the womb.
Don't kill free pills, men of Capitol Hill. Just think twice if you don't think women will.
Remember just how you voted.
It might cause an insurrection.
It should be noted, mess with us, lose your election. We women hope that both parties know.
I prevent pregnancies, this is true.
And you might prevent presidencies too.
Well, I just don't think women are gonna want to give up their birth control.
Well, that doesn't mean we need the pill.
What do you mean? Do you know something that works as well for birth control?
Oh, yeah. A picture of Rush Limbaugh.
Well, that was two from the Capitol steps. Secret Service man, and I'm just a pill. I hope you were listening, because I wasn't. I was talking with the guest, or guests, actually. But the main man on the mic here is Daredevil Doug Loiselle, who has dared to come back to Santa Cruz, whence he was banished in 2009 for torts or accused criminal behavior which had nothing to do with his job, and from which he has either, I think you had some alcohol problem back then that you acknowledged, but that really, as far as I never smelled any liquor on your breath. No women came to me with tales of sexual abuse. In fact, people told me, and I learned that it was in fact true, that you were probably one of the best liked, well, there weren't many of them before you, it was only one before you, Ken Cole, directors of the homeless, what I call the homeless lack of services center, what was is more popularly known as the homeless services center out at 115 Coral Street. But they ran you out of town on this stuff, but you have still been keeping an eye on what's going on. By this stuff, I mean accusations of sexual improprieties with a woman who was later proved to be lying. Was that the story?
Well, actually, the...
Talk a little closer to the mic, by the way. Yeah,
basically the case was dismissed. And so I was able to go back, and I was able to re-enter a plea of... not guilty. That plea was accepted, and since that plea was accepted, it created a situation where I was never convicted, and so there was never a conviction. Then it went to a civil case, and in the civil case, I paid out no money. So there was.
They attempted to sue you for damages.
She attempted to sue me for discrimination.
And in what way did she claim? First of all, who was this person?
Well, I can't say her name because it's still...
What was the nature of her? Can you talk about it at all?
I can talk about it in generalities.
Well, what kind of a position did she have?
She was a student.
And she claimed that you had discriminated in what way?
Well,
In the civil suit,
the discrimination was that it was under Title IX that she did not have or was able to access an equal education, because that's part of the Title IX status.
This is down in L.A.?
Yeah, down in L.A. Right.
And somebody, you moved in, grabbed all her books, ran off with her computer?
No, I was highly intoxicated, and I also was under the influence of Ambien. And I touched her on the face. I gave her a hug. And I think that was about it.
Anyone in the studio wants me to touch them on the face and give them a hug, let me know. But I want no lawsuits at the moment, if you don't mind, and no criminal charges. Which you were charged criminally for that, correct?
Correct, yes. And what happened was she had reported this to law enforcement, and at that point law enforcement proceeded to use her identity to trap me into meeting her at a hotel under the auspices of, you know, we're going to have sexual relations. It was, of course, 9 in the morning when this was occurring, so I was completely inebriated at that moment. As
9 well. In the morning? You were an early drinker?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. You don't seem intoxicated now. Is it because it's evening, or what's the deal?
Well, I have stuff to do for Christmas and Easter, so I'm not drinking now.
I see. You're holding off until after Easter. It maybe, right. You know, all the bets are off.
Right. Okay. Right. No, I've actually ceased to I ceased drinking after that because I felt like drinking had taken a lot away, more away from me than it had given me in the criminal.
This was 2010, 2011 when you came to this conclusion. 29.
29.
Because when I knew you in the summer of 29, there was no indication that you were much of a problem drinker. Was that the case then?
No, I wasn't a problem drinker at that point. And the situation occurred in 2008. I stopped drinking in 2008, started attending Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, started to get into...
Did you tell the authorities here, this is a big issue since, you know, you got bumped out of here because you became the director of the Homeless Lack of Services Center in 2009 in the spring?
Yeah, March.
In March. Did you advise, you, was a big deal you didn't advise them of these allegations and the ongoing criminal claims at that time, and that was why you suddenly became a persona non grata here 6 months later and kicked out?
That's exactly correct. Right. I didn't talk about the case. The criminal case went on for a year and a half.
Uh-huh.
And finally it was settled. After it was settled, then the civil case
dragged on for another...
I'd say 6 months.
And was it significant that you didn't mention this? I mean, obviously it had some impact in the sense that the reputation-sensitive board of directors would naturally, you know, flee from you like poison if they learned of this, do you think? Well, you wouldn't have been able to get the job? What would...
In a sense, it was a mistake not to mention what had occurred up front. Okay.
In another sense, it wasn't, because when you were here, you were able to actually get the bathrooms open during the day and establish the only 24-hour bathroom in Santa Cruz for homeless people.
I'm very proud of
and
that.
And all of us, our bladders are all very grateful for that.
No, you know, I needed a job. It's an economic world. I mean, you know, I needed a job. I was struggling finding a job. This was a job that came up. I thought that maybe... until I could somehow get this legal matter resolved, I could hang on to this job. Hopefully the legal matter would have been resolved in my favor, and I could move forward. My current employer knows exactly what happened.
What kind of work do you do now?
I'm the program officer, basically program director at a methadone clinic.
Mm-hmm.
So we work with patients who suffer from opiate addiction, heroin, pills, et cetera.
And you had something of an addictive problem with alcohol, or just an occasional overindulgence? What was your...
I was a binge drinker, and I also would poly-substance use, you know. I think probably the best way to describe my addiction was more, so whatever was available, I would ingest.
I don't really, frankly, give a shit about what people ingest, as long as it doesn't interfere with their work or they don't abuse other people around it. And you've seen very, you know, regretful when I've talked to you, probably because of the difficulties it's put you in. And also, I would say a lot of us regret that we lost what seemed to be a very... an unusually sensitive and somewhat courageous director at the Homeless Lack of Services Center. I mean, you didn't do everything. You and I did not agree on everything all the time. But I think, did you still have lockers at the Homeless Lack of Services Center when you were still there?
Yes, we had lockers.
They've removed all those lockers, you know.
They've removed the lockers.
And did you have access to phone services for the homeless when you were there?
Yes.
They don't allow that anymore either. You should be aware. Are you familiar with that?
No, I'm not.
Well, you know, I mean, we made some improvements since you were gone.
Right.
You don't want to pamper these homeless people. I mean, it only encourages them like, you know, flies and gnats. They come in droves, you know, I mean, because of the wonderful services. And that, of course, is, I'm being sarcastic, folks, so don't catch my dry irony. It's a little too dry sometimes. I'm told oh, don't be ironic. They say, because some people say, see, he said he's a serious. And I'm not serious. I'm bitter, really. And I also think it's, well, it's something that deserves sarcasm and deserves a kind of sharp lampooning. And so I do that. Have you been much in touch? I know you. There is a former employee of the Homeless Lack of Services Center that you've had some contact with, and she too was fired at that time or let go. Sometime she may be willing to come on the air. I'm hoping that she will at some point. We'll drag her into the studio, perhaps.
Well, of course.
And have you talked with her much about what's going on out there? Does she know? I guess she hasn't been out there that much either, though.
Well, actually, I found this employee to be an excellent employee. I felt like she really related well to the clients. Very friendly, very gentle, and really having a high level of empathy for the clients. Unfortunately, after I left, she was terminated. I'm not sure exactly what the circumstances were around the termination, but it sounds to me, from speaking with her after that, that basically they cleaned house and moved most of all the previous employees out and moved a whole new section of employees in. I'm not sure why or what that's all about, but it seems that I was actually, to be honest with you, I was shocked that she was terminated because she was an excellent employee, and I'm not sure if she was able to relate too closely with the homeless persons there. I don't know if she was too friendly. I don't know if she didn't.
You've had conversations with her recently, though.
Absolutely.
And I know that today was the homeless memorial reading of the names of the dead.
Right.
I didn't get out there, but I did get reports from those who were. There's some controversy in town now about trying to establish a warming center so that we don't get deaths or more deaths over here. I heard there's been one death off the record. I don't have the name of the woman who supposedly died, and I don't know that it's even been confirmed, supposedly behind Benicio's Liquors a week ago. But I don't know. Second-hand report, or actually a third-hand report. But it is still an issue that, I guess, Brent Adams is working on the Sanctuary Camp proposal that I have mixed feelings about, but I like the idea of any kind of increased accommodations for people who are outside. He has been leading a group that's, I guess, meeting next Sunday, for anybody interested, at the 525-35 Spring Street. And I'll be announcing that again on the Sunday show for those who want to kind of wander on out there and check into it. I think they're writing letters to all the different churches, to the government agencies, saying, you know, oh, please, please open up. Oh, please, please open up. And, of course, my reaction to this is, you know, this is good. There's nothing wrong with that. But if you're going to wait for that while people freeze their asses off for the bureaucratic process to take place instead of doing something more immediate and direct, however, you know, maybe risky in terms of potential legal action, then you're making, I think, the wrong choice. But it's also, of course, a risk for every person who's involved in that kind of action. We used to do it up in San Francisco with Homes Not Jails. And that's where you would, you know, people would target a building that no one was using, and, you know, that had been some slumlord had for years, and then we would go into it and open it up and make it usable, and the police would arrest us, there'd be a big hoopla, and then they'd eventually drop all the charges. At least that's what happened in my case in the two or three times I did that back in the early 90s. I guess one group has talked about, and I've posted a flyer online saying, if there's freezing temperatures being predicted, I, for one, as well as several others, will be down in front of the Civic Auditorium at 5 o'clock on that day, encouraging people to come up with a solution. That could be any number of things. It could be a tent outside with a heater. It could be visiting a building. I understand the City Hall offices are vacant at night and very warm. I understand the Civic Auditorium is vacant at night. I mean, there are plenty of vacant buildings, and the idea that people are going to freeze to death because it might, annoy Mayor Rattlesnake Robinson and her takeover Santa Cruz constituency, and actually it's not just them, it's Don Lane too, and all these wonderful liberals who like to talk a lot about homeless civil rights, or not even civil rights, they talk about homeless services. The civil rights issue they don't really like to get into. But I do. That's the main thing I'm concerned about. You went out to the Homeless Lack of Services Center today.
Yes.
And what did you find? Had anything changed in the last 4 years? What did you find?
I couldn't see anything that had changed.
So it looked pretty much the same.
It looked pretty much the same.
So it hadn't gotten any worse.
It hasn't.
Unless you want to use the phone or possibly...
I actually think that there was probably more people loitering outside the shelter or outside the grounds than I recall.
Which is actually not so much, is it not illegal, because loitering laws have been tossed out by the Supreme Court,
right,
40 years ago, but the Homeless Lack of Services Center has declared on different occasions they're establishing a no-impact zone around the Homeless Lack of Services Center.
Right.
Which, I don't know, I mean, apparently they're not enforcing it if you were out there today. Of course, it was a Memorial Day for the dead, so maybe there was lenient view.
Well, there was a lot of people in the no-impact zone, which... Is that an ordinance that they've created?
No, it's a rule they have put up indicating... I don't know if they have a specific set of rules that says if you're in the no-impact zone, we'll start denying you services, or if it's we would strongly urge you not to be in the no-impact zone because the Harvey West Association and the nearby businesses are paranoid bigots, and we have to respond to that or else we'll lose our credibility with the right-wing city council. I'm not sure what exactly it is, but...
The arbitrary nature of things like no impact zones and we're going to deny you services because you're sitting on the railroad tracks, you know, 40 feet down, that the arbitrary application of those kinds of rules, regulations, ordinances, and who's making these decisions? You know,
Mayor Robinson is moving around with the clean them out team, as I like to call it. They call themselves the clean team, to pick up needles, dispose of feces, old condoms, and of course the occasional homeless backpack, which who knows what it might have inside. Could be some kind of terrorist activity going on.
Explosive.
Recently, Take Back Santa Cruz activist posting on Steve Plaich's website, Citizens for a Better Santa Cruz, but not a better website, unfortunately, has stated that Take Back Santa Cruz has finally agreed that it will train its volunteers in these cleanups not to pick up homeless property and destroy it.
Right.
But I kept asking them this year after year, and they would never acknowledge that, even though SOS, the environmental group that does regular cleanups on the beaches, apparently, according to Steve Plaich again, who's... I don't know how accurate he is, but I haven't heard him contradicted, said that that was the case when he went out on each of those SOS cleanups. So Robinson is out there on the tracks picking up the needles and so forth, and then waving them. Actually, she doesn't wave them. She threatens to wave them.
It's so blatantly discriminatory to have a person who's sitting in a park cited for loitering versus a family in the park who's having a picnic.
Yeah, but we don't want their kind around here, Doug. You got to clean up the whole area, don't you understand?
I think I mentioned this before, that in the history of humanity, there, I believe, has been one case that I could find, and this is with a lot of research, several hours of research, okay, of an individual stepping on a hypodermic needle and picking up a disease. It just doesn't happen. It's not the pandemic that people make it out to be. The media, the city council, the city ordinances. You know, this idea that hypodermics are all over the place. That hypodermics are, you know, proliferating Santa Cruz. It's just not true. It's not accurate, and it's not an accurate representation of the dangers that are involved.
Well, now, it is true that I found my first hypodermic needle in 20 years about half a block from Ocean one day. And that's the only one I've ever found, and I've been out there a bit. I mean, I live indoors, and I don't, you know, I'm not all the time on my feet, but I spend, you know, a certain amount of time each day, usually in downtown Santa Cruz or thereabouts, or at least three or four times a week.
You have a significantly higher chance of being killed by a wild boar in California.
Well, I'll tell you, the council can be pretty bad in that regard.
No,
they're very, very boring. I'll tell you, I can't stand them.
I'm just a statistics guy. That's all I'm
too
saying.
Civilized, even. Well, it's not really. Yeah, all kidding aside, if I were, I mean, I have not done further research on it, but the very cursory research I've done, the very limited research is, if you're working in a hospital and
right.
you're working with active blood,
right.
then you have a danger of infection. What
right.
you don't. But the people, and I've talked to friends of mine have said that their relatives who live in the, you know, near the Emmeline complex, where some claim there's now an upsurge of needles being discarded. That's where the needle exchange now is. It's outside the city in the Emmeline complex. It's been
right.
banned from Santa Cruz,
right.
thanks to the work of the Clean Them Out team and Takeover Santa Cruz, the two groups that how have people on the city council, at least Takeover Santa Cruz does, which they call Take Back Santa Cruz, if we want to be very accurate. But that leads me to another issue, because we've kind of been over this one a lot on the show. What about, there's one of the constant mantras you hear of people talking about the homeless lack of service center, denouncing it at council. I mean, I denounce it for other reasons,
right.
for lack of shelter, for lack of due process for disabled people, for lack of transparency and accountability, for corruption, for not serving homeless people, you know, primarily, and the way that it needs to. And these are all concerns that, you know, that doesn't mean I don't like the fact that they provide two meals a day. I'm glad that there are the limited shelter services there are.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like to think too much of this security gate horse shit that's going in for $100,000. That makes me wonder. That makes me wonder. It makes me a little ill.
There was also a security guard today when we were driving by, who is patrolling the outside area.
The no impact zone.
The no impact zone.
Right.
But he wasn't having much.
No civil liberties zone, yeah.
He was not having much of an impact on the no impact zone. He seemed to be just kind of meandering back and forth.
I mean, it sounds, in a way, this is both good and bad. I mean, it sounds like the Monica Martinez, who is the executive director of this Homeless Lack of Services Center, is engaging to some extent in token smiley-wily behavior around this stuff. In other words, she's saying to Take Back Santa Cruz types and to Mayor Robinson and former Mayor Bryant and the folks on the shitty council, as I like to call them on occasion in my adolescent way, see, we're doing this. We got security guards. We got fences. We're going to do an ID program. We're very concerned about all this stuff.
There's a tremendous amount of effort that goes into perception, okay? But the problem is that you can try to create a perception, but the perception and what actually works can be significantly different. And I think that that's what's going on right now at HSC.
And ironically, that's also what's going on the other side of the political spectrum, although the HSC is not very left. If you talk about, you know, people that are actively concerned with equality of treatment and equality of resources and, you know, new kinds of services that actually attempt to really meet the needs of the majority of homeless people. But they have some, you know, they're token efforts, a little bit more than token efforts in that direction. But on the right, you have this also, this call for public safety, or what they mean is that they're talking about the perception of public safety. Of course, they've generated the hysteria that has created this perception, which
right.
is to say, needle mania,
right.
Look at all these crime figures. Homeless people's citations are way up, and they take, 30 or 40% of the police calls? Of course, because the people who are calling the police are calling homeless people on the crimes created by the police department
right.
through the city council for camping, being in a park after dark, sitting near a building, and so forth.
You know what's kind of interesting? The individual that I was with and myself, when we drove through or drove by Homeless Service Center, we were talking with one of the employees. We asked her about the gate. I said, well, so we hear you're putting in a gate to do what? And she said, I have no clue. And I said, well, what's it going to do? Or, I mean, what's the purpose of it? Do you think it's going to work? And she said, no, it's not going to work. It's not going to do anything. And we asked, you know, well, what's the intent? And I guess apparently the intent is to keep the criminal element off the campus. Those were her words.
You mean the upper-level bureaucrats who are kind of siphoning off the money? That's going to be difficult. I mean, they're going to have to, these guys are pretty, and these women are pretty shifty types.
Well,
they can wear business suits at times.
They're going to have a card, actually. So...
I see.
So
well,
what's going to have to happen is you're going to have to be a card-carrying homeless person.
A card-carrying homeless person.
To enter the campus, which I find...
I love that campus word that you've been using for years. Someone would say the camp or the, I don't know what the hell it is. It's not a campus. You're not learning anything there.
Well, you give me a word and I'll use it.
Complex?
Complex. Okay, so the
bunch of decrepit buildings with a bunch of they're not really overpaid. I don't think the staff is really overpaid,
No. But
the money that's going there is not getting to homeless services. It's getting to buildings and other things. I mean, I hear that and correct me if I'm wrong. Maybe you've heard more, but it's been said to me recently by an individual who's doing Public Records Act requests to try to find out what's going on, that the Rebele Family Shelter, which is the largest and newest building in the area, which is supposed to house 29 families, is generally half empty, but I don't know if that's true. I've heard conflicting stories. Do you have any word on that one?
I don't know. I don't have any information on that whatsoever.
Uh-huh.
I know it's a 6 month transitional. It's a 6 month transitional family housing program. The issue now is that HUD is moving away from transitional housing, and so. The Rebele Family Shelter may end up being more of a permanent type of shelter for families. That's just speculation on my part because I know HUD's changing their approach. And to be honest with you, 6 months is not enough time for a family to stabilize and to achieve permanent housing. I was reading today on the HSC website that 80% of clients who matriculate through Homeless Services Center achieve permanent housing, and I'd really like to see how they came up with that number. I can't.
Now, where did you read this figure?
This was on the. I was reading the Homeless Services Center.
Well, maybe matriculate means the 3% of the people that get through the program that attain their matriculation certificates.
It could be.
I mean, if you got to have a card to get in, maybe you got to have a certificate to get out. You know, I mean,
80% is an astronomical figure for taking persons who are chronically homeless and placing them into some sort of permanent housing or permanent shelter. I find it disingenuous at best and dishonest at worst.
Subtle distinctions here. You're tuned to the to Free Radio on the air, I think, at 101.3 FM. Not very strongly on the air when I came into the studio, but I think we are on the air. And that is only going to be for a while until we need actually another place to locate. So if you actually know of a place in the downtown or the general Santa Cruz area where we can actually set up a transmitter, it can be all we need is a place to set up an antenna and a transmitter, and it's, you know, we'll be in much better shape. Right now, we're really on a very tentative basis. At any time, this could be ended. And I think, by the way, we are. If you've been having trouble hearing Doug Loisel, our guest, it's because I've had his mic down for the last 20 minutes. But he's got a strong voice, and I guess you may have heard him distantly in the background. Now, however, I've turned up his mic, and hopefully. When he's not busy conferring with other secret members of the studio audience at the moment, he will be able to get back on the air with us. But if you want to call in and ask questions of Doug or of me or make comments of your own about what you've heard, the call-in number here is 427-3772, 427-3772. I encourage you to do so because... Hey, that's what we're here for, 427-3772. If you have any breaking news, I've been hearing some strange stories around town. Like I heard one I was awakened from sleep yesterday by a phone call reporting a story that was still a secondhand story that the police had tased a man in the metro. The security guard had tased a man in the metro having to do with some questionable behavior on his part, or maybe just, I don't know what. I've had bizarre relations with the metro authorities at different points. They arrested me at one point for talking to homeless people and then refusing to leave, even though it was daytime, I was outside in front of the metro center, I wasn't doing anything. Well, it was because they later claimed I was blocking the 7-foot-long metro sign in front of the metro center. They didn't say that at the time, but they did say that later. So there's sort of someone creative in that metro office. Is, you got to hand it to them. In any case, this person supposedly was tased, and again, I don't know if this is true. Cell phones were being confiscated by the private security guards of the metro in order to do what? I suppose to cover up their act would be my cynical suggestion. But, you know, maybe they had some broader purpose, like, I don't know, making sure everybody has a working cell phone or possibly maybe replacing cell phones with upgrading them. If this actually happened. If anybody has any news about whether this actually happened, please call in. I don't know that it did. I just heard a rumor that it did. I also have been told that Jasmine Byron and her husband have turned in their concerns to the police department about the gun-drawn, don't-try-to-leave-with-your-food behavior of Officer Hernandez at the Salvation Army November 26th Thanksgiving meal. That's we heard her talking about that on the air about a month ago, and that one was kind of a doozy. I still haven't been able to get more information on that from the well, I frankly haven't gone to the Salvation Army to do any interviews on that subject. But there was this homeless memorial today, and I know that some listeners may have been to it. I understand that one individual stood up and gave a very eloquent demand that that authorities open warming centers, and if they didn't, that people themselves get together and do what I suggested, or perhaps what something similar to what I suggested, which is establish warming centers themselves, and that was, you know, received favorable treatment or notice, or what, the guy was not immediately hauled off and tased for saying so at the homeless Memorial of the Dead. I was at the one last year or the year before, and it was, I think I even recorded some of it. I think it was indoors last year. This year, I think it was out. I'm not sure it was indoors or outdoors this year, but it was, it's traditionally held in the dining area, and there are sort of pious comments made, and little candles are lit, and people come up and they remember the people they've lost, and, you know, that's what people do when other people die, and, you know, I can understand that, except when it's turned into a ritual and a sort of a, I don't know, a prettying up ceremony, although you don't really pretty up death that way, but you make it appear that there's a kind of concern. I heard that I think really does not exist. It's a form of hypocrisy of a certain kind. I think it should be, if people are really concerned about the name of the homeless dead, they should announce them every month, why they died, how they died, and what kind of provisions can be made to address those problems in the future. You didn't do that, Doug, when you were on the Homeless Lack of Service Center director. You were in that position. Why not?
I think I missed
that. Hold it. Let's turn up your mic. Now I can actually hear you.
I think the 7 months I was there, I missed the window. It must have been in that other 5 months. So what
nobody died in the outside in the 7 months you were. I can't believe that.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
In other words, every month there should have been a reading of the names of the dead, not once a year. It's sort of like we'll feed people at Christmas and Thanksgiving. And by the way, there's supposed to be a Christmas meal by the Homes Food Not Bombs group in front of the post office on Christmas Day. Everybody else is crapped out on that one. Go ahead.
Well, I have nothing to say other than
guilty, guilty, guilty.
Guilty, Your Honor. Guilty as charged.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, at least you're honest about it. Monica will smile and say, "I won't talk to you," and then moves on. That's her sort of approach.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you have a chat with Monica today when you stopped by?
I have never met Monica. I'd like to meet her. I tried to friend her on LinkedIn, and she wouldn't friend me, so I felt
a little... Well, I don't friend anybody on LinkedIn either. I think it sucks, but try sending her an email. I'll give you her email address.
Yeah, I can get her email address.
Not that it would necessarily do you much good.
What should I ask her?
Ask for forgiveness for ever coming on the program here. And I don't know what you should ask her. You might just, you know, ask how things are going. You know, that you've been, of course, I don't know, she may regard you as the pariah of the area.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'll tell her you have some concerns about, I guess you could ask her some substantive questions about specifics. I mean, you just figure about 80% graduating, you're really impressed, and you'd like to know, you know, where these people have gone, and is this happening, you know, generally, or was it just one special year's figures? You could make that as a sort of a request.
Yeah, she won't talk to you.
Well, the last time I tried to talk to her was at the task force meeting, as I call it, the public hysteria task force meeting, known more generally as the public safety task force meeting at city council, where they rubber stamped these recommendations and
right.
said they were proceeding with them in January, in spite of some useful commentary by Don Lane and Micah Posner suggesting that not every homeless person was a perverted, needle-using, crapping everywhere they go individual and who had to be viewed with suspicion and driven out of the area. Again, I am exaggerating what Take Back Santa Cruz and what the task force people say, but it tends in that direction is the problem. It tends to suggests that individuals who sleep outside are criminals by the very act of sleeping outside, which, of course, is preposterous.
Some of it ties into indoor and outdoor substance use, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
that's a huge distinction that law enforcement makes. Indoor substance use, acceptable. Outdoor substance use, unacceptable. And so, although indoor and outdoor substance abuse research indicates that it's about the same.
You speak as a person who's researched this yourself or has been reading reports?
Research.
You mean original research or you read reports?
Read research.
You read research?
Research. I am a doctor.
You may be a doctor. I don't give a shit if you're a doctor. Have you been going to groups? Have you personally done any kind of surveys, or have you just examined the literature and done some...
Literature review.
Fair enough. All right. We don't want to give you any false credit here.
Okay.
Or disparage you in any way that's inappropriate.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Allow me.
Please.
Indoor and outdoor substance use takes place at about the same rate, but outdoor... substance abuse arrests are obviously significantly higher. And that ties into the whole homelessness, criminalizing of homelessness, et cetera, et cetera. But I was going to ask you, actually, before we got on that, have you asked Monica to be on the show?
You know, that's a good question. I know that I have asked her for information that she's declined to give me repeatedly, and
what information was that?
No, that's right. That's perfectly right. I appreciate the interrupting because you're trying to clarify. 2 or 3 years ago, 2010 actually, when Peace Camp 2010 was in front of the county building, a group of activists who actually set up a 24-hour bathroom in the spirit of Doug Loisel, to provide for people at the protest, as well as people who wanted to come by and use it. This is when there was no sleeping. Well, as tonight, there's no place for the overwhelming majority of homeless people to go. There's place 100 places in the Armory, 46 in the Pauley Loft. I don't know, scattered spaces elsewhere, but no more than 200 spaces throughout the city area as, you know, legal sleeping spaces, and 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people out there. We attempted to get figures as part of Peace Camp 2010 from the board of directors of the Homeless Lack of Services Center. And Monica Martinez was currently the executive director. And we went to, I think we went to Letitia Schwartz as well. She was there. And we, Ed Fry and I and Linda LeMaster, three of us, went in and said, we want four things, or I wanted four things, I know. I wanted a statement from the Homeless Lack of Services Center that there was shelter for only 5 or 10% of the homeless population that night. Two, that they were full every night, substantially. That was just how it was. And there were two other things that I wanted that don't immediately come to mind. But these were obvious things we needed because the county, the city, it was actually the deputies, were trying to prosecute people, and did.
Right.
One man was jailed for 2 years for sleeping on a bench
right.
next year in front of the county building. Linda LeMaster was given a suspended sentence. Well, I think she ended up with a fine, but she could have faced up to a year in jail and did in a jury trial. And Martinez and others, essentially, one, it's hard to say and perhaps not fair to say they perjured themselves or falsely testified in court, but they gave the misimpression that there was always some kind of space available, and if somebody wanted it, they could come and get it, and so it gave the misimpression that this really was some sort of either grandstanding or it wasn't really a necessity defense appropriate. That was what both she and the head of the River Street shelter made testimony that put people in a position of being convicted of what's called illegal lodging, which is a misdemeanor crime under the penal code. And has been used to go after activists. I've been charged with it in the past, and they've always dropped the charges because I've always said, good, take me to jury trial. I'll do what I can with that. We'll see how we can go with that. Which is actually not always a good thing to do. One time I did go to jury trial in San Francisco. I was found guilty and then had to serve a month in jail for serving people free food. But then again, because I was in jail, people served food on the steps of the jail, and they ended up ending the feeding ban. So that was kind of good. That worked. That was pretty good.
Right.
With Food Not Bombs.
From my experience, my 7 months, we were full all the time. There was really no space available. The only space that might have been available would be Paige Smith, and the only reason why there would be space available there is because there was a waiting period to get in. There was some screening that had to go on.
Smith is a 6-month program nearby.
It's an 18-month program.
18-month program.
Yeah.
But not the Pauley Loft, which is...
Pauley Loft is just emergency shelter. I believe it's 46.
40, I think it's 46 beds
46
now.
Beds. Always full. Always full.
Waiting list of six weeks or something
and
like that.
And, in fact, I do believe that I had a couple of people writing letters stating that because clients had been cited for sleeping outside, coming to the shelter and saying... I came to the shelter, I'm on the waiting list. We would write them letters stating that so that they could take it back to law enforcement and say, look, you know, there's just really no place for us to sleep. There's nothing we can do.
There was another...
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
No, you know, the other thing that... and I think that we had this discussion way back when, you know, you were kind of, antagonizing me a little bit when I first started...
antagonize you?
I think you were saying, I can come on the campus anytime I want to. I can set up a booth there. And I said, sure. And then the other thing that you asked for was to see the budget. And I said, sure, you can see the budget. And I believe it, with nonprofits, there needs to be that level of transparency that you should not just see the annual report, because the annual report will have a little pie chart at the end and it'll say, you know, this much went to this much, this one. You should actually be able to see with all nonprofits, including Homeless Services Center, line by line budget items. You should be able to see how much they're spending on food, how much everybody's getting paid, what they're spending on staples, what they're spending on gasoline, car upkeep. I am a firm believer in that level of transparency. And I think that, as I recall, way back in the day, I offered to show you that stuff, and I don't think we ever got there, but I think that's important.
It's interesting. There are some people who are kind of taking a deeper approach to what they see is the corruption and the homeless lack of services center, the failure of funding to reach homeless people, and the I'm not sure if it quite. I mean, I think I'm thinking of John Colby's Public Records Act request, and he's requested me to ask you numerous questions, and I asked you to look over some of his stuff before the program began. I also tried to get two other activists, Becky Johnston and Linda LeMaster, to review some of his concerns, which I'm I've read some of his stuff, and I've got to admit, it's some of it's kind of deep for me, and for me to give intelligent responses without really understanding it. John's a passionate guy. Mm-hmm. He has been working on advocating for not just theoretically everybody should have civil rights, but particular people. He advocates for particular disabled people.
Right.
And I have a lot of regard for that. I think a part of it is his passion for justice. He wants to see them have justice, and he wants to see change, not yesterday, I mean, not tomorrow, but yesterday, mm-hmm. which I also have some sympathy for. He had some questions that... He wanted me to ask you, but you may have seen some of his questions and his writing.
Yeah.
While I scrounge around, try to pull that stuff up here, any comments on what you have read, any thoughts about any of that? I'm sorry to be so vague. I apologize to John, too.
there was a lot of information there. There was a lot to glean through at work today while I was supposed to be working on some other stuff. So...
You ducked the bullet, in other words.
Yeah, I did read through it. I just don't remember the particulars. And I was actually hoping you'd ask me some specific questions and that could jog my memory.
Let's see.
I think we're both somewhat failing at this moment.
Let's see if I can... List of questions. Here we go. For your interview. And I immediately wrote him back saying, fat chance, John. You know, I mean, but let's see what I got. Maybe I can actually just verbatim read off some of this. And
sure.
You may not. I don't think you're going to know a lot of this, and I don't know how. One of the problems is I don't know how meaningful it's going to be to the audience. These are questions that maybe you can consider later, and maybe try to respond to.
Well, maybe we can look at them in a general sense.
Yeah, let's see what we can do here. First question is, and this has to do with the fact John has been. Describes being driven out of Santa Cruz by the John Stewart Company and sort of a combination of police department and management thuggery, mismanagement of the Mission Street apartments, Mission Garden apartments. I have no love of the John Stewart Company. I've heard bad things about them from mm-hmm. different apartment complexes. Mm-hmm. But as to the merits, the truth of, and the accuracy of John's particular concerns, I can't really say in terms of any direct information. And, you know, much as I appreciate John's work, it's hard to, as a commentator, simply, you know, swallow what somebody one person gives you if you haven't done independent research. And since I'm too lazy or too preoccupied to do that kind of research, it puts me in a position where I go, well, I don't know, you know, it's what he says, but, you know. So that may not be fair to John. But his question is this. The Mission Gardens Apartments is a 50-unit apartment complex right. of permanent structures, 20 large one-bedroom apartments, 14 large two-bedroom apartments, and 8 very large three-bedroom apartments, including a community building and a park. Why was CCH, that's Citizens Committee for the mm-hmm. Homeless, transitional housing for 39 transitional units of prefabs and manufactured housing funded with more money than Cal IFA loaned to build Mission Gardens? It's a very technical question, which, you know, is also rather obscure, I think, to most people. He's talking about the Page Smith right. Community House. Those were the trailers. That was the Citizens Committee for the Homeless's transitional housing. And I think he may be referring to the re-upgrade of that Page Smith Community House, which was recently upgraded.
Right.
And so, if you understand the question, can you put it into common English for kind of idiots like me? And then give me an answer, will you?
I feel like we're talking about derivatives.
Yeah.
So it's my understanding that... Those 39 structures were not new when they were put on to the campus. That's where I can start from.
The original ones or the new ones?
The original ones.
I think that's true. As okay. I remember, that's true. As that I was recall. Back in 1997 or some such
right.
thing.
Right. And I don't believe that they were replaced. I believe that they were upgraded. Or were they replaced?
I am not sure. It was recently done, and I can't say.
What I can say is that when I was there, I know that they were in poor condition, and I knew that we were going to need to either replace them or we were going to need to significantly improve them. I was looking at some grant opportunities to actually replace them with new prefabricated homes, which are really quite beautiful. The prefabs now are not your double wide, you know, mom and pa sitting on the front porch anymore. I mean, they're beautiful. And so we were looking into some grant opportunities and some capital opportunities to replace all the units. As far as, you know, his questions were kind of implying strong, I don't know if strongly is the right word, but they were implying that there were fiscal improprieties.
But what he's saying here that I get from this question is, look at the incredible 50-unit apartment complex that was created over at Mission Gardens Apartment, and yet more money was given to the Homeless Lack of Services Center replacement, what, you know, the Page Smith Community House replacement, and what do you got? A bunch of crap, not maybe better, but certainly crappier than large two-bedroom apartments, a large one-bedroom apartment, eight very large three-bedroom apartments. In other words, the money is being mismanaged if, you know, if more money is being spent on trailers than on decent apartments over in, you know, at Mission Gardens. That's, I guess, the clue. Is that what he's saying?
I'm going to have to somewhat disagree with that.
Maybe I'm misunderstanding it.
Because I disagree with the premise. Because when you have a development, and I've done developments before. I did a $9 million development, a $5 million development, a couple of other different capital projects. And you're receiving money from either the federal government, state government, local governments. It's fairly closely monitored. And so if we're talking about mismanagement of large sums of money in regards to capital projects, it's fairly unlikely that that occurred.
Well, it's not. I think it's more like he's saying, look at the huge amount of money. I mean, look at the huge amount of product that an even lesser amount of money creates. Why such a low product for such a high cost?
Well, they're stupid.
There's
stupid construction ideas too, right?
Or there's corrupt construction ideas too.
I wouldn't necessarily say corrupt.
Well, either they're one or the other. I mean, it could be both too.
Or one or the other, or both. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily corrupt, but ideas that sound good initially that may run into more money later on. So, for example, I've got 39 units, and somebody says, I'm gonna donate these 39 units to you. That's great, okay? So you're going to get all this free housing. But then in reality, you've got to create the pads, you've got to create the infrastructure, you've got to put in the plumbing, you've got to get a crane out there to put these things on the campus.
Well, I hear you, but look at this, Doug. I mean, if he's right, I mean, I've been to the Mission Gardens apartments. I don't have a really clear... They're clearly better than the Page Smith stuff.
Sure.
And the question is, if they're spending more money on Page Smith, and maybe there's been a rise in inflation and the cost of building, because one was built considerably before. That was his first question. Well, let's move on from that.
Well, do we know what the cost differential was?
I don't know. It's not in this question.
See, I think that's the key, is that if we knew the cost differential, we'd be able to
determine... All right,
determine...
Colby, get the cost differential. We want that. Where did all the money go, he asked. So I think your advisor has given you a thought. What did you want to? We have some secret conversations going on in the studio, folks. I wish you were here. This is incredible. But it's going to be. We may be learning some pretty top secret stuff. So.
Well, they did put a recuperative bed program in.
Yeah, I read that today that there was a $1.3 million, I'm not sure, $1.3 million or $13 million, I wasn't sure which.
Probably $1.3 million. They put in the recuperative bed, so maybe that, and because of the high cost of you know, medical equipment, et cetera, maybe that contributed to this differential.
Expensive.
It's a whole building.
And that was a part of Page Smith.
I
see. Okay, yeah. So we're getting some information here from a secret source, which later I may divulge if given permission. Otherwise, I'd have to kill myself, which is not an option at this time. Who is, this is the third question, who is Carol Shannon? and nobody knows who Carol Shannon is. I've never heard of her, probably have, but I don't know who she is. She represented herself as the executive director of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. At the time, the Citizens Committee for the Homeless made an agreement with the city of Santa Cruz to receive about $500K zero-interest loan and a HUD home block grant in exchange for CCH granting the city property at 109 Coral Street, 733 River Street. This is, of course, I think we're talking the 80s and the early 90s, and you guys weren't around then. I was, but I was certainly not privy to or actually terribly interested in, perhaps I should have been, these kinds of financial dealings. Who were the members and executive directors of the CCH? Well, you know, I think that's public record. I don't have it. I think Becky Johnson was on the board of directors of the CCH at that time before she resigned because the CCH was doing things like trying to arrest or expel activists like myself from their meetings when we came and said, hey, baby, why are you arresting homeless people on your property and that sort of thing. It appears that the CCH received the property from the UC Regents. Why did the UC Regents once own this property? I vaguely remember this. The Regents did own the piece of property at one, what is now 115 Coral Street, and with the corner there, that whole piece of property.
Right.
And activists like Calamity Jane Immler and Lighthouse Linda LeMaster and Sidewalk Shannon Kasamo held hunger strikes in order to get the county and the city to open up a cold and rainy night shelter and end the sleeping ban in 1985, many, many years ago. And then the next year they opened up, I guess the shelter got opened up thanks to Bob Listener for one winter at the what is now the Kumbois Jazz Center. That was the first cold and rainy night shelter. But it only lasted for that brief period of time. And the next winter, the same problem rose. And there was some deal going on blocked by Marty Wormhout, who was then, I don't think she was mayor at the time, but she was Laird. And these pseudo-progressives were never any good on homeless issues. They were all bad. I mean, they can call themselves, you know, socialists. Rotkin can say whatever he wants. But the fact is, you know, they were bad then and worse now, unfortunately. So this is information that possibly somebody else would have, but I don't think you would have, unless I'm wrong. Have you been researching the origins of the property at the River Street and the?
Well, I know that I know the corner where Paige Smith was somewhat of just a field, and apparently there was a. HPHP.
There was a house there that is now the River Street Shelter.
Right.
There was a smaller house.
And then
it was a UCSC piece of property.
Right, and there was a high concentration of homeless persons there, and I think Paul Lee got involved in it somehow with the homeless garden project, and then they decided to go ahead and put the trailers on because they figured, well, let's just convert this area since
the homeless garden project wasn't involved. They owned the field next to the River Street Shelter. The River Street Shelter was owned by the city after it bought it from the University of California.
Okay.
CCH owned the property next door. I know because I was arrested on that property for sleeping with homeless people. Twice, once in 1988 and another time in 1991, we asked them to open it up to homeless people. It was actually one of the few places where you could sleep without violating the camping ordinance because it was behind a fence in a backyard, and it was kind of an exception. And for a time, thanks to an arrangement between the assistant chief of police, a guy called Dunbow, and the former director of the Homeless Community Resource Center, which preceded the Homeless Services Center called... That's what it was called, and her name was Karen Gillette. There was a tolerated campground there for about 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
They called it the Back 40.
Right.
You know,
right.
And that's what that was about. But that doesn't get to any of the questions that old John is asking here. Let's see if we can go on to the next one. It appears CCH received this property from the UC Regents. Why did the UC Regents once own this property? I have no idea, John, and I doubt you do. Now, see, these are questions, unfortunately, that... don't illuminate the kinds of subjects I'm interested in on my show, Colby. All right, moving along. Who is CJ Investments? He wants to know. They were the trustees of the deed. And so this, he does very, very elaborate research, trying to find out the origins of things, which I respect, but which really is not radio worthy. Mercy Charities Housing, he says, question number 7, was required to administer the project. Why did the city make CCH hire Mercy Charities Housing as the administrator for the transitional housing project? Well, Mercy Charities Housing is a group controlled by Catholic Charities West or something. I denounced them repeatedly at city council because they started the project called the Nueva Vista Project, then known as the Dolphin Lee Project in the Beach Flats. This was a huge amount of money which tore down existing apartments and built better ones, but it's what they should have done was buy a new piece of property, keep the old apartments, and have additional housing, and or else give the tenants guarantees they could get into the housing, and they wouldn't do either. Instead, they had their little project, which was Catherine Byer's pet baby, and she proceeded to ram it through, and I was actually... I think that was when Mayor Fitzmaurice became extremely upset with me because I was, I think at one point when I was making a, I came on and I said, this is a wonderful project to spend all this wonderful money. What we don't need, it's really, I use this Indian accent. He denounced me as being a racist and walked out of the room, taking the city council with him. It was quite an impressive moment. I didn't know I was so powerful at that time. But we weren't able to get those guarantees, although I understand our pressure did, I think, prevent them from doing worse than they could have done. Mercy Charities Housing was required to administer the project. Why did the city make CCH hire Mercy Charities Housing? I don't think you know any of this. I don't either. What exactly did Mercy Charities Housing? So, yeah, I'm afraid that these are questions which they may well be relevant, and I would encourage you, if you have any answers to them, and you've seen them, I think I forwarded them to you.
Yeah, you did.
You might have some, you know, questions about that. What we really want, however, are questions about... answers from you about what do you think of, we've already talked about the security gate. There are claims that, and I've heard this from Steve Plaich, who unfortunately is becoming more and more right-wing, and maybe I can call him on the phone and have him to get him involved in this discussion. He hasn't answered a phone call from this show for months, I think, maybe once. He claims he's talked to homeless people from the Page Smith Community House, and that they are upset about drug dealing in the homeless lack of services center area at the Bay, the Paul Lee Loft, and that they're also afraid, there's a concern that disabled people are being strong-armed out of their money, their security checks, or, you know, they're being sucked into drug deals. What's your experience? You were there for 7 months. Did you see a lot of this happening? Is it a real problem? What's the deal?
You know, I wouldn't consider it. It happens. Yeah, of course it happens. And although I would not necessarily consider it a serious problem, which is kind of maybe an oxymoron, in that there's going to be drug dealing in a situation like that. Drugs are part of society. Drugs are part of the homeless community. I don't think that that's anything that is a mystery. You're going to have drug dealing that goes on your campus, to the amount that you can mitigate it. I think that it would be a situation you would, you know.
So you tolerate the mic. You confess here on the air.
It's a complex.
Yes, good point. I think I said that before, didn't I? Yeah.
The same amount of, there's no distinction. There's no distinction between drug dealing or drug usage, et cetera, that's going on the complex versus 50 yards from the complex versus 150 yards.
We don't want their kind in our neighborhood. Get rid of the homeless lack of services center. This is the claim of a number of groups, including, although Mayor Robinson, Rattlesnake Robinson, as I affectionately call her, she's kind of insisted that she's been really saying this, but that certainly is what some of her supporters are saying. What's your response to this?
Well, if you want drug usage and drug dealing contained, wouldn't it make more sense to have it on the complex rather than off the complex? Number one. Number two.
Enforce all laws more harshly. That, of course, is the cry of the public lack of safety hysteria committee, which task force actually.
So you're going to have drug dealing and you're going to have drug usage on the complex, off the complex, around the complex, in the Poganip, down at the beach. It is what it is, you know. To say that it's concentrated in that area.
Let's move from drug dealing.
To say that it's concentrated in that area and that it is a higher problem in that area or a more intense or chronic problem in that area is just inaccurate.
Well, there are people tend to congest in that area, so it might be reasonable to say that because there's a more density of people, because people come there, that's where people gather, and that's where you find it. But the real issue is not whether personal use of drugs, even personal sale of drugs, but violence and intimidation around drug sales, use, and that's the issue. Now, what about that? Did that come up as a problem in your 7 months?
No.
And I see your assistant here is telling you that that's not been the case
It's not been the case at all. There was a couple of instances where we heard that there was an individual who was selling stuff off a cart. As soon as we found out that he was selling alcohol off the cart, and as soon as we found out that he was somewhat pressuring people to pay him certain amounts of money, he was gone. That was it. So.
And we hear from the side from your assistant that
he's still there.
So you weren't effective in getting rid of him.
Apparently not.
Well, I think we have only the city to blame for ousting you. Or what was he gone during the period of time when Doug was?
He was around in the impact
zone.
Right, and again, you know, my case in point is that you're right. There is a concentration of people in that area, yet it's happening everywhere.
My concern has always been about issues like lack of due process, favoritism, the concern about the management with maintaining an image that panders to right-wing sensibilities. So, for example, they don't want to say we don't have we can only serve 5% of the population. We're essentially doing a token job or a very, very limited job because this might discourage, I don't know, you would think it might encourage donors, but actually, you know, for in the eyes of some, perhaps Monica Martinez, it discourages donors unless you're doing a wonderful bang-up 80% success job. You know, that means, we better send more money there. My concerns have always been different than those that are currently being touted about and which will be coming up next month as the task force's recommendations hit city council like shit through a goose, pretty much, is the way I suspect they're going to be coming. Although we've heard some people say, oh, no, Don Lane and Michael Posner made sure. No, they didn't make sure of anything. And they've been empowering this kind of stuff, in my view, through supporting the criminalization of homeless people. That was an issue that I brought up with you, and I think we may have disagreed on. I wanted you, I don't know, did you ever come out opposing the sleeping ban publicly?
Yeah, I am now.
What about then, when you were the executive director? That would be
You know, when you're the executive director of a shelter like HSC, you're striking a balance between business interest and your client's interest. And so, it's delicate.
Dear. This has a very unpleasant, familiar ring to it. I got to say that Ken Cole, the first director of this homeless lack of services center, initially was very outspoken against the sleeping ban.
Right.
He later changed. However, while he was initially director, he was quite... Of course, it's also true that the Downtown Association and others unanimously agreed in 1999 on the city's homeless issues task force that the whole camping ordinance should be scrapped, that it was wrong given the shelter emergencies and the shelter shortage. It was just bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was amazing to me that people who are on the Downtown Association would come back with this because they are notoriously conservative. So I can understand how Ken Cole might, you know, feel more comfortable saying, I oppose the sleeping ban. I oppose the whole camping ban, not just the part that says you can't sleep after 11, but everything involving camping and sleeping. I mean, regulated camping, yes, but camping ban, no. And, but you would have to say, you can't say that, but you couldn't say that when you were on the 7 months. It doesn't really matter that now, but Monica Martinez has been, I've asked her to do the same thing, and I don't think I've gotten a response other than, I'm too busy to talk to you, you know.
Well, I think, I think in 2008 when the economy kind of collapsed, I think people were looking for some way to justify this, something to fix, to rectify the situation. The sleeping ban, homelessness, it's an easy target. You know, it's cutting into our commerce. We can't have all these homeless people downtown. We can't have all these people sleeping everywhere. We're losing our businesses, et cetera, et cetera. So I think there was a heightened level of paranoia right around that time. I don't know how it is now. Certainly I've changed my... I can speak more openly now. Now that I'm not economically... dependent on.
Well, let me ask you a question about your current job. I mean, sure. you're working with a methadone clinic.
Correct.
You favor injection and inhalation centers like Vancouver has and some European countries do, where people can go and shoot up or inhale their drugs.
Absolutely.
Have you publicly come out and stated that?
Yes.
Well, you're doing so now, of course.
Wait, did I say that?
No. Oh, there you go, folks. He's on tape, or at least on an audio file.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It would be... It would be a difficult task to
politically. You mean
politically to make that happen? But absolutely, I am.
Do you have
in
any
favor.
New information about the success of such programs in Europe and in Vancouver?
As far as
inhalation and injection centers for, you know, heroin, methadrine, cocaine,
you know,
aspirin, whatever.
Yeah, you know, those programs are successful. They're successful on a whole number of different
research
levels.
Research-wise, or are you talking ideology-wise because you think you like their programs? What's the deal here?
Research-wise.
Yeah, research. What's the last research you've done on that?
Well, basically what you get, and I can't cite the authors, but I will. Mm-hmm. Next time I'm on the show.
What's the date, more or less, of these studies or these reports you're basing?
Recent 2011, 2012, 2010.
Uh-huh.
These reports indicate that, and you, it's intuitive as well, but these reports indicate that when you have a safe environment, a harm reduction environment where people can use and use clean needles, use in a certain area, basically, what you get is significantly less bacterial infections, which means significantly less hospital room visits. You give people more opportunity to ultimately achieve sobriety if that's their goal. You give.
What about drug users flocking to these areas? As we know, according to Takeover Santa Cruz, they flock to Santa Cruz because of the wonderful lack of services. I mean, the wonderful services at the Homeless Lack of Services Center, because of the druggy climate, because of the anything goes, keep Santa Cruz weird climate. Isn't that been encouraged by these kinds of inhalation and injection centers?
I think there's three reasons why people come to why homeless might gravitate towards Santa Cruz, right? Number one, the weather. It's beautiful, and it's a beautiful place to live. Just the same reason we all want to live here is the same reason that a homeless person might want to live here. Two, there is an availability of drugs here in Santa Cruz, okay?
You think that is one of the reasons people come to Santa Cruz?
Sure.
For the drugs?
I think there's an availability of drugs here that you might not get in other places like Boise, Idaho.
Well, what about, let's say, as compared with, I don't know, San Luis Obispo, Palo Alto, San Jose, San Francisco?
I think there's a higher availability of drugs here. That's my opinion. That's not research. The third reason is that when you have an established population. Okay, so why did we have at the turn of the century, you know, little Italy, little Poland, little Russia, Jewish communities? Because people will gravitate towards people that they feel comfortable with, and because there's already an existing homeless population here, people will come to a place like this because they feel that there's a level of camaraderie or comfort with like-minded, like persons. we gravitate towards that. So I think that I don't believe that it's the massive amount of homeless services that are available in Santa Cruz that has anything to do with the homeless coming here, or this being a homeless quote unquote magnet. It's a nice place to live.
It's a beautiful place to live in many ways.
And you know, we dehumanize the homeless persons to the extent that we don't even acknowledge the fact that they appreciate beauty on the same level that we appreciate beauty. So this dehumanization, I mean, why wouldn't you live in Santa Cruz? It's beautiful. The people are kind, well, for the most part. There's a lot to do here. You've got the ocean, you've got the mountains, all the same things. We act like a homeless person isn't going to have any of those experiences, that they're not going to appreciate a sunset, right? Or a beautiful sunny day, or even a rainy day. And so I just think that we pretend that there's some sort of robotic nature to the homeless person.
Well, the next statement that always follows this, or that can follow this, is it costs money to live in Santa Cruz. So you get these people coming to Santa Cruz. They don't have any money. Then they can just live off of all this free shit that is being thrown out by crazy liberals who just want to, you know, this is dumb compassion. We've got to be. And if you want to hear more of this December 2013 interview with Doug Lozell, you're going to have to go to the Huff website because we don't have time to finish it, but you can listen to it. Check it out at huffsantacruz.org and tune in again on Thursday, 6 o'clock in the evening, when I'm likely to be back on the stream. Thanks for listening.